Expanded Perspectives, Classic Rewind. Hey, 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 I hope everybody's doing okay. It's your bud, it's your boy, Kyle. I hope everybody's staying safe out there. I'd like to welcome y'all to our entirely new show, Expanded Perspectives Classic Rewind. That's right, this is a new show where we go back in time and re-air some of our favorite episodes that we've ever done from the past, because some things deserve a listen to more than once. On today's show, we're going to be going all the way back to September 30th, 2013, where we had an interview with Mike Mays, the Texas cryptid hunter. Now, if you're not familiar with that, or you haven't listened to that episode, let me fill you in. Mike Mays runs a website that specializes in spotting and capturing black panthers that are in Texas, because the parks and wildlife of Texas claim that black panthers definitely do not live in the state of Texas. However, there are thousands of sightings and hundreds of photographs that people send in with trail cams and things like that of, you could see, are black panthers. And I, for a fact, I've never seen one myself. I've never even seen a mountain lion in the wild, only at the zoo. But I know that they're out there, and I know that black panthers are out there too. And not just in Texas, they're probably in almost every state. I know that there's sightings in Arizona, there's been sightings in Florida, sightings in Louisiana, so it just makes sense that they're probably more places than we realize. We talk to Mike about the Black Panthers, we talk about the Jaguarundis, and we even talk about a Sasquatch sighting that Mike had in the Big Thicket. So without further ado, let's get into that interview. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives Classic Rewind.
All right, sounds good. And joining us tonight is Mr. Mike Mays, also known in the Twitter world as the Texas Cryptid Hunter. So, Mike, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing just fine. Appreciate it.
Would you mind filling our listeners in a little bit, kind of give them a little bio about yourself so they know who we're chatting with?
Well, sure. I'm East Texas boy. Grew up in East Texas and Southeast Texas. Moved to Central Texas to play basketball at a small college up here. And school teacher, married to a school teacher, two kids, and just pretty much a normal guy.
That sounds awesome. Basketball player, that's something that I never got to do because I'm not very tall.
Well, I'm 6'3", and I went from being one of the bigger guys in high school to being the smallest guy.
Oh, wow.
In college.
Well, we were on your website earlier, and like I said on when we were off air, of how great of a job you have done on that website to keep everybody informed. It has awesome blogs. I got on there and I got caught up reading for an hour or two. I just kept going through them and going through them. And there is something on there I'm really interested about, and I'd like to talk to you about tonight.
Sure.
It is the black panthers, the black cats in Texas. Mm-hmm. And the reason I'm interested about it is I have a really good friend of mine who I've grown up with and bow hunted with, actually saw one here in Parker County, just right down the road pretty much from where we're recording right now, about 10 years ago. And that's what really got my mind to thinking about it. Now, like I said, I've grown up hunting my whole life and been in the woods all over Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico, you know, running around. I've never had the privilege of seeing a mountain lion. I've seen bobcats and everything else, you know, but I've heard the mountain lions, but never seen a black one. And when he came in and talked about that, I was like, man, I didn't have any idea that was out there. Can you give us a history of, or what you might know about, I mean, any of the black cat stories?
Well, sure. Well, growing up, I grew up down close to Big Thicket country and Piney Woods. That's where my people come from. And, they were just part of life. I mean, every weird noise you heard out in the woods, you know, they'd tell you that was a panther, you know, screaming. And and basically everybody knew, lived down in the bottoms or in the woods, that, you know, there were two kinds. There were tawny colored ones, you know, which just mountain lions, and there were black ones. And down there where I'm from, they just call them long-tailed cats. And they'd tell you it was a tawny long-tailed cat or a black one. And it wasn't really considered to be anything that unusual or special. They were just another animal.
Right, very commonplace, I guess.
Well, I don't know about common, but it's, you know, it's just something that they knew was out there and didn't think much about it either way. The only time people get worked up is when you go down there and you tell them they don't exist.
Now, have you ever seen one yourself?
I've not seen a black one myself. I have not. I've only had the privilege of seeing one mountain lion, and that was in Sam Houston National Forest in 2005. And, of course, they're not supposed to be there.
Yeah.
That's a whole different kind of issue, I suppose.
Well, I was telling Kyle off air, one of the articles that I had read that you had written is, and part of it actually talks about the Texas Parks and Wildlife Service says that that the black ones don't exist anywhere in North America, that
yeah.
It's non-existent. And I'm like, that's a kind of a bold claim to make whenever, you don't really know what exists everywhere in North America.
Well, that's true. And of course, you know, in their defense, no one has brought one in and slapped it down on their desk and said, here it is, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what science demands. And of all the mountain lions in zoos and in captivity, none of them have ever had a black offspring. So the assumption is that melanistic trait is not present in their genetic makeup. And so they don't consider it to be a real animal. You know, it's, well, somebody saw one maybe in low light conditions, or it was a misidentification. They saw a hog.
Yes, the standard misidentification stories.
Yeah. It's either a pet or it's a hog. You know, that's kind of the way it is here in Texas.
Now, of course, we're all saying mountain lions and the panthers, all that. Now, I saw also you had something on there about, like, was it a jaguarundi?
Yeah, jaguarundi. It's really kind of an odd-looking animal. It's almost weasel-like as much as it is cat-like. It's a very long-bodied, small-headed cat. It's in the puma family, just like a mountain lion is, but it's considerably smaller, but it's a long-tailed cat. And they vary in colors from kind of a reddish, rusty color to a gray phase. A lot of them do go through a very dark gray phase. But they're mainly... if they're thought to be in Texas at all, it's way down south, like the Rio Grande Valley down there. There are many who would dispute that. Including a gentleman named Chester Moore Jr. I don't know if y'all are familiar with Chester, but he's pretty famous regionally as an outdoorsman and outdoor columnist. And I
believe I've actually heard an interview of Chester's.
He works out of the – I know he writes for the Port Arthur News and the Orange Leader, as well as doing some freelance work. And anyway, you know, he's firmly convinced that they're up further in East Texas. And he thinks that a lot of these black – panther reports can be attributed to the jaguarundi.
And that's interesting. I saw a picture. What made me ask is I saw a photograph on your website, and I was like, what in the heck is that thing?
It's odd looking. It really is. With it, you know, like I said, very small head, long body, very low to the ground. The problem with that, and I don't doubt for a second that there probably have been some cases where that is what someone saw. It's certainly far from common. Anything in Texas at all would be very, very unusual. And to see it as far as the Texas Hill Country, Central Texas, the Piney Woods, and basically anywhere else, that would be highly unusual. And that would be a pretty spectacular find in and of itself, even though it's a known animal.
That's a long ways from home, isn't it?
Yeah. The problem is that they're not very big. You know, they're you know, like I said, they're just not the size that a lot of these folks report seeing. And so it can't explain them all. But, I don't doubt that there are some that probably were jaguarundi.
Now, without putting you on the spot, and, of course, this is still going to be kind of putting you on the spot, what do you or what family do you believe that these felines that they're seeing are actually from?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, and I'll be honest with you, I have no idea. My theories Well, you can break it down. There are only a few possibilities. One is that they are mountain lions, cougars, and that science is wrong, and that there is a melanistic strain, you know, periodically, and that's what people see. That's one possibility, that it's just a common mountain lion that's black. Another possibility is, we just mentioned the Jaguarundi, it's a case of misidentification. And a third that's pretty popular is that people are actually seeing jaguars, which again, South American, Central American cat for the most part, but they do make their way up through Mexico. Texas is part of their historical range, as is much of the Deep South. And they've captured photographs of jaguars in Arizona recently, and within the last couple of years. So they do drift, you know, across the Rio Grande and up through here periodically. Thought to be very, very rare in Texas. And jaguars are known to have the melanistic trait, and they can be black. The issue I have with that theory is, if, you know, you see people see all these black cats, but no one ever reports seeing a regular spotted jaguar.
Mm-hmm. Right. And,
the black jags are still by far the minority. They're not super, super unusual in the wild, but they are still by far the minority of the population. So you would think if there was a breeding population of jags up in this part of the world, that people would also be seeing the normal
colored ones. Yeah, that would make sense.
So so your fourth possibility is it's just something that we haven't documented yet.
We haven't got our fingers on yet.
And so I have, you know, very little idea. And the authorities would have you believe that they're all, you know, the exotic pet trade is big, you know, right now. And there are people that keep leopards and mountain lions as pets and that sort of thing. And that these are all basically leopards, which are African cats, you know, of course. And but they've been turned loose by their owners, or they've escaped, kind of like the pythons in Florida that are ruining the Everglades. You know, they're escaped exotics and they're all pets. But, you know, and again, maybe a sighting or two or three, but to say that, you know, hundreds of people have seen escaped pets seems like a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, I agree. I can see where they could account for some, but not all of the sightings that they're having.
So those are the basic theories that are out there. And honestly, you know, I don't know. I would like to find out. That's what I'm trying to do.
Well, I saw online, it's been a few months ago, that there was a woman reported one, her and her daughter had seen it in Waco, like a black cat and maybe like with two cubs.
Yeah, that's
are you familiar with that story?
Yes, sir. Actually, that one, despite the fact that it's practically my backyard, I just got notification of that, surprisingly enough, just day before yesterday. And that's actually been a while. I have no idea. You know, they saw something. I haven't spoken to any of those witnesses personally because, like I said, that report didn't come to me. And that's a problem, too. A lot of people don't know there's not supposed to be such a thing. And so that's one issue. And then those who do know there's not supposed to be such a thing, they don't know who to call.
Right. Yeah, that would make sense.
And but Texas is just filled with stories, especially from about where I am now. If you take Interstate 35, it kind of bisects the state, and you go east, especially, you know, there's just a rich history of black cat sightings, and it's just, again, you know, you get out in the country and folks live in more rural areas and down in the bottoms and in the backwoods, and it's just another animal, you know. They don't think anything about it.
Are they more popular, the sightings, on the eastern side of the state?
Yeah, and if you think of it. Now, there are quite a few that come in from the hill country. Okay. And if you think that, and they roughly correspond to where you would expect to see a mountain lion, possibly. Now, mountain lions got really scarce due to hunting pressure and other things. They seem to be bouncing back a little now. They're real strong out in the Big Bend country, out in the Trans-Pecos. And that's the only place where the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department seems to feel like there's an actual breeding population. And now as you go, you know, as you go farther east, where there's more rainfall, more cover, just easier to stay out of sight, you know, the sighting seem to pick up.
Do a lot of people submit game cameras, pictures, or how do people usually submit their photographs if they have something?
Well, one of the problems is there aren't that many photographs.
Okay.
A lot of people don't get interested in trying to get a picture of one until they've seen one.
Right, and they didn't have a camera, just saw it for a glimpse, right?
Then it's off to Bass Pro Shops. Or and, you know, cats are like stealth itself. I mean,
right.
If you see one in a lifetime, you know, you've been privileged. It just seems that that's the way it usually works. I've seen a few pictures, and if you look on the blog, we have a couple of photos that have been sent in, and they're intriguing, but, you know, there always seems to be, you know, if you guys follow the whole Bigfoot thing, you know, the term blob squatch.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Well, these are, you know, blob cats.
Right.
And there always seems to be a problem. You know, there's one really interesting picture that was actually submitted to a Field and Stream photo contest, and you see the whole body with a long tail, but the head is behind a tree. And so the debate raged whether that's just somebody's black Labrador retriever or is it a cat, you know, where if the head was visible, there'd be no doubt. Mm-hmm. I've got a couple of pictures on the blog that are pretty impressive looking if you just, you know, hit that black cat label. Black Panther label, and, you know, you can scroll through and find them. But the problem is always there's nothing in the photo to give it any scale. And so how big was it? You know, you've got the person's word, maybe, but, you know, science demands more than just anecdotal, you know, eyewitness kind of reports, you know. And despite having the picture, if there's nothing in it that you can say, well, you know, that little shrub there is 3 feet high. This thing's as tall as that. That thing's 3 feet high. That's not just some black feral cat. You know, if it's just in a field somewhere walking through some grass, then, you know, it's hard to be able to definitively prove how big it might have been.
I was going to ask you about one of those pictures that you were kind of talking about is on your blog of, it looks like they have overlaid the photo of the cat.
Mm-hmm.
Like has some maybe some white tail in the picture with it, where you can, but it's like a rear end shot of the animal.
Yeah. That was taken in the hill country, that's a camera that was meant to be set up and you know watch a feeder. You can see the feeder in the mm-hmm. back, and the overlay was actually done by a good friend of mine, Alton Higgins, who happens to also be the chairman of the North American Wood Ape Conservancy. And he did those overlays for me. And, you know, it makes a compelling case that it was a pretty good-sized, you know, cat. You know, I think everybody has generally a pretty good idea how big a whitetail doe is. And you know, it compares favorably as far as size. You know, it seems to be bigger than just a house cat or something.
Right, it gives you some sort of scale.
Right. Now, the thing about that is, and it's similar in some ways to what the Bigfoot folks have gone through with the Patterson-Gimlin footage, is that, you know, this guy sees this very clearly and says, yeah, man, that's a pretty good-sized cat. And the next guy comes along and says, oh, no, that's small, you know, the perspective is a trick of perspective, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, fisherman's trick about when the fisherman's holding a fish up and the pig
pulls it away from your body.
Yeah, see how big his thumbs look in the picture.
Yeah, right.
I'll tell you. And so these debates back and forth. So it's, again, you find things that are compelling, but again, it doesn't constitute proof until, you know, somebody can bring one in.
So they have like a tape measure, duct taped to the leg of the feeder.
Exactly. No, I mean, you laugh, but that's exactly the kind of thing that you know, needs to be done. And I would encourage anybody out there who's got a game camera set up to have something there. Now, you know, you say, well, these commercial feeders are pretty standard, and to some degree that's true, but there's a bunch of different ones out there. And you know, have something that's fairly commonly known. Everybody knows what size that is, and have it sitting somewhere within the frame of where you're going to, where your picture will be taken if something wanders by, and that could really help.
That's a really good idea. It'd be great to have a T-post in the ground out there by the feeder leg, and they just have a measuring stick on it of some sort.
Exactly. And of course, that wouldn't eliminate all the debate, you know, the perspective problem that we just discussed. You know, this cat was still pretty close to the camera, and like I said, it was walking away from the camera, and so you know the rear end looks bigger than the front end, and you know, you get into that whole deal. Animals just don't seem to cooperate very often, where they just walk out broadside,
you know, in the daylight and stand still.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I saw after reading one of your blogs and scrolling down and going through some of the comments. I saw one, and I had saw where you had responded to this person, and I was hoping to know if they got back with you. And if not, I'm going to be kind of bummed out. But it took place in Bastrop, and the person claimed that they'd seen one attacking a horse.
Right. Really haven't. You know, one of the problems with the blog, you know, I have it opened up to receive comments. People can read a post and put their 2 cents worth in on it. And the problem comes is that most people, when they log on and they do make a comment, log in anonymously. And so I get the comment. Many of them are really interesting that I would like to discuss with folks, but it's just, you know, it says from anonymous, and here's their comment.
Right.
And I have no way to, I can't hit reply and right, send anything back to them. So it's totally dependent on their coming back
to read it.
Yeah. And looking the comments and seeing if I've answered. And, I've actually made several posts to say, hey, you know, send the email, send me an email, and then we can discuss it. I hope no one's out there irritated that I haven't gotten back to them, because it's simply a case, I don't know who you are, you know, and I can't get in touch with you if you comment, you know, anonymously. And I can understand why you wouldn't want to put your contact information in a contact for the world to see, but yeah. You know, that email address is there on the blog on the right side, and that's really the way, if you're interested in finding out what's going on in your property, of getting a hold of me, where I can actually get back with you.
So you hear that, people, anybody listening, if you have anything interesting to report, please email him. Let's not go on the blog and just talk about it. Send him an email. Let's get to the bottom of this. Let's see, what else was I going to talk to you about? How long do we know of have these reports been going on? I mean, have you traced them back to like 50, 60, or even a couple hundred years, even in some of the history that have been around here in Texas, of how long these have been reported?
Well, they as long as there's been a Texas, there have been reports of black cats. Now, it's, you know, I've only been in the blog business for, well, it's been less than 10 years for sure. I'd have to go back and look at the start date, to be honest, probably about 6 years. And like I said, it's just something that's always been here. I mean, you know, there was a columnist that used to write for the Beaumont Enterprise when I was a younger man living in Southeast Texas. His name was W. Keith Block, and he's passed away, but his columns, are a lot of them are still out on the web there. If you search for him, W. T. Block was his name, and so he used to write about, you know, old time Texas and pioneer type days and early settlers, Southeast Texas, and things like that. And he wrote several columns that talked about black cats, and also what he called Mexican lions, Mexican tigers. Now, Mexican tigers were nothing more than jaguars, but that's what the early settlers called them. And so these things go way back. The last jaguar, and it was just your normal one with the rosettes, the spots, if I'm not mistaken, was killed in Brownwood, right around Brownwood, back in the 40s, I believe. But they go back, to the old, the first settlers, of Texas. There's just a rich history in the folklore and in the history of the state.
Well, that was kind of something I was wondering, because I know that a lot of the comments made about the chupacabra is something that just kind of sprang up over the last 10 or 15 years. So that's how I was kind of.
Well, there's truth on both sides of that. The chupacabra myth, legend, folklore, whatever you want to call it, actually got its start in Puerto Rico and made its way over with, I guess it came over with Latin American immigration as folks moved in from that area. But what's interesting is what people are calling chupacabra now or nothing like the original cryptid animal that was described in Puerto Rico.
Right. Wasn't the one in Puerto Rico supposed to have like wings and was kind of reptilian almost?
Well, it was kind of this weird looking from the illustrations I've seen. So, of course you got to take that with a grain of salt, It's like that commercial we go out on the internet. They're not allowed to not tell the truth. But, it was almost looked like one of these gray aliens in the face that you see with the big black eyes and it's reptilian, kind of upright on two legs with spines coming out of its back and kind of hops around with fangs and really alien looking kind of creature. And now in Texas, basically anytime somebody sees a coyote or a fox with mange, it's a chupacabra. Now that's what the media seems to have latched on to. And so they're both right. In this we call them down, well, in my area and the people I talk to, we don't call those mangy dogs chupacabra. They're blue dogs. Is what they're called down here. And because they have a grayish, bluish tinted skin, kind of like an elephant, mm-hmm. And they do look really, really strange. And there's I haven't done a lot on the whole chupacabra thing because I just honestly, I just don't think there's anything much to it other than, you've got, some poor sick animals out there with real bad mange.
That's what I was telling Kyle earlier is I used to hunt a lot in Seymour. And I'm like, if what the media these days is considering a chupacabra, then I've probably killed about 15 or 20 of them.
Okay.
Because it was, you wouldn't hardly see a coyote up in that area that didn't have probably over 70% of its hair missing.
Right. Yeah, you're hunting out in the middle of nowhere out there now. You're hunting out in Seymour.
Yeah.
But, it's just, it's a little frustrating, but the media is what the media is. And the thing about it, an animal without its hair looks completely.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives Classic Rewind. I hope everybody enjoyed that interview with Mike Mays. Man, he's a fantastic guy. He's a big guy. He's got a cool website. If you want to go check it out, which I highly suggest you do, just go to texascryptidhunter.blogspot.com. I will also put links to it in the show notes. Also, he's got a children's book that he sells called Patty. That's pretty cool. If you got a youngster out there that's trying to get into cryptozoology and you want to show him a side of Sasquatch that's not scary, that's a pretty cool book. First and foremost, I'd like to thank all of y'all for listening and supporting everything that me and Cam do. It's a real pleasure. If you want to help us out, the best way you can, because, you know, we don't sell merchandise, we don't sell t-shirts, we don't sell tumblers or coffee mugs and things like that. But that doesn't mean you can't help us. If you really want to help me and Cam, the best thing you could possibly do would be to write reviews for us, to give us to rate the show, and to subscribe to both on every podcatcher as well as our YouTube channel. That's right. We have a YouTube channel that has more than just the podcast on there. If you're not aware, Cam's been doing a separate show called Cameron's Cryptid Classroom. I just started a new show over there called Unusual Encounters. Now, those are eventually going to make it to the air, but right now you can go to YouTube and check them out in person. Go over there, subscribe. Even if you're not a big YouTuber and you only listen to this in your car on your way to work and stuff, I get it. But if you want to help us out, go over there to YouTube, subscribe. We're trying to build a listenership over there as well. And believe it or not, the reviews, the ratings, and the subscriptions to everything we do actually does help us get out in front of more people. Also, if you want to help the show, the best way to spread a podcast is word of mouth. So tell your friends, family, things like that. That really helps us out. Also, don't forget, we have Expanded Perspectives Elite. You can go to the website, click on the Elite tab, or you can just go to expandedperspectives.com/elite. Signing up is easy. It's $5 a month, and you'll get extra episodes every month, as well as the access to the entire back catalog, which right now is over 230 episodes. So that's more than 230 hours of content, all for only $5. And that money is used for data storage, books, things like that, that we use to create the show. We need equipment. We need microphones. We need cameras. We need stuff like that. So that all helps us. I hope everybody out there has a good week. Cam is out of town currently in Asheville, but we'll be back soon. So till next time, stay safe. I'm Kyle. Peace.